おてんばいたずら大好き、かけっこスキップ大好き、私はキャンディ。ひとりぼっちでいるとちょっぴり寂しい、そんなとき恋の鏡を見つめて、笑って笑って笑ってキャンディ、泣き嘘なんてさよならね、キャンディ、キャンディ
。Yes, hello, hello friends, people who aren't going to whatever's going on in main events. Oh, okay, yeah, no, so you guys are the smart ones. Okay, so I've actually never been to a masquerade. They always schedule my panel during masquerade. No, that's not why. I don't know. The line's always long and I'm always scared of it. Oh, right, has anyone ever been to one of my shoujo manga panels before? Oh, okay. So they're hello people. I know you guys.
Yes.
You do.
Now I remember you. I think I might know that guy. I don't know. So today we're going to talk about the 1970s. Last year I talked about the 1960s, and before I talked about the 1950s. And if you go any earlier than that, you don't really have shoujo manga. You just kind of have little cartoon strips that were in girls' magazines that were not really shoujo manga. But yeah, anyway, in the 1970s, you had lots of shoujo manga. You had very good shoujo manga. In fact, the best shoujo manga. This is like my favorite time period.
Yay.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's my yay. I hope it's gonna be your yay too. So first let me tell you a little bit about what Japan was like in the 1970s. It was a pretty crazy time. I mean, the 1970s was a pretty crazy time in general. Like, it was, you know, there were hippies and, you know, people were protesting the Vietnam War in America, and they were also protesting it in Europe, and they were protesting it in Japan, because Japan was helping America by letting them use, I think, Okinawa as an airbase from which to launch the planes that went over and went explodey over Vietnam. And so the Japanese, yep, still do that today, still use Japan that way. Poor Okinawa. Little girls getting raped. It's very sad. No, it really is very sad. I'm sorry, that was glib. But yeah, but also people were getting money. People were getting rich. They're buying lots of toys. They're buying lots of, you know, Prada bags and nice shoes and all that. And everyone's pretty happy, except for the people who were protesting. They weren't really that happy. And Yukio Mishima also was not that happy because he killed himself after talking to students who were protesting. Those aren't related, though. But basically, Yeah. Hello, everyone. This is the 1970s shoujo manga panel. I'm talking about Japan in the 1970s. But yeah, it was kind of crazy town, as you can see from this picture. And actually, when I was doing some research on to internets, I found a neat little video clip. Yeah, so this is in Shinjuku. There's some fighting going on. Shinjuku is a really popular hangout spot for people. And this is Tokyo University.
And the
riot police and the students are fighting it out. And you can see the students throwing bombs that they made.
機動隊8500人の出力行使によって安田講堂は泣き
上がりました。 Yeah, there's more riot police, broken helmets. They're trying to... Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was a pretty crazy time. The Japanese youth had been protesting since the 50s. When you've been protesting that long, because it's like 20 years, it starts, you know, the movement changes over time. And before, you know, it had been more popular, and now it was getting more and more radical. And you had a lot of crazy, crazy kids doing crazy stuff. Like, I think one student group took over, they hijacked an airplane and flew it to North Korea because they thought it would be the promised land. And no one ever heard from them again. Very, very sad. We can only imagine what happened to them. So there was a lot of crazy protesting going on. And there was a lot of radical theater, radical arts, and really, you know, psychedelic stuff. And if you look at this woman's crazy outfit on the left, this is from the Young Lady magazine, you can see how it's kind of psychedelic. You know, someone having a drug trip made that dress. You can see the Cher thing. She has the Cher thing going on, that 1970s fashion, which is familiar to us. I mean, it carries over. Like, people say, oh, Japan, 10 years behind fashion and stuff like that. No, they've been pretty current. If you look at this girl and her crazy psychedelic fashion, you can see how the hippies were kind of inspiring clothing. There's this very natural theme going on. But they were also inspiring shoujo manga. And if you look at the shoujo manga, you know, well, you'll see when we get to it. If you look at the girl on the left, check out her eyes. I don't know how well you can see it, but she's got this crazy heavy eye makeup on the top, which makes her lashes look really dark and really pronounced. And you'll see in the pictures later that's very common in shoujo manga. That's really where the crazy shoujo eyes are coming from, with the super ridiculous lashes. It's actually being inspired by people's makeup. Yes, also this was a time of cute. Hello Kitty came up in the 1970s. Actually, this is from a comic magazine called Lirika, which was all in color, and which I believe was sponsored by Sanrio, which may explain why it was all in color, because it would have cost a lot of money. The magazine itself is pretty amazing. I mean, it has stuff by Tezuka Osamu and Mizuno Hideko and a lot of like big name artists, and like really beautiful stuff. And it's like full color, and you know, I'm looking through, I bought a couple of them when I was in Japan. I managed to find them in Yuzu bookstores, and I'm like, man, why isn't manga in color? This is beautiful. Actually, I was going to talk about that later. The point of this thing, this cuteness is big. Cuteness kind of emerges as this extremely marketable commodity aimed at young girls, which eventually kind of extends over to all of society. And I found this comic, and I thought it was really cute, because you see Hello Kitty, and she's saying, hello, hello. And, you know, in Japanese, when you're talking on the phone, you say, moshi moshi. It's like they're trying to translate that from Japanese to English, but hello, hello is not what you say on the telephone. And then her mother is asking her, Kitty-chan, where are you calling? She says, oh, I am calling to find out the weather forecast. I am calling Mr. Star. Oh, it's very cute. The comic magazines, I believe at this point, were weekly, if I remember correctly. I think that may have started. I don't know, I didn't have too much time to do research this go around, so I just kind of scanned up some comic magazines that I had and looked on auctions on Yahoo Japan. But you can see that, I don't know if you have been to my panel in previous years, the comic book magazine covers in the past were always pictures of little girls. And cute little girls smiling on the covers, real people, not like manga characters. But by the 1970s, those images were so much a part of Japanese society that you no longer needed real people on the covers to sell the magazines. You could just have manga images on the covers, and that, you know, that was saleable. And this one over here that says Lirika on it is the full color one. You can see actually Unico. I don't know if anyone knows the anime Unico. It came over, yeah.
Yeah.
It's based on a shoujo manga. It was Tezuka Osamu. And then on the other side, you can see these cute people from Margaret. And there were a lot of different magazines, and the different magazines really specialized in different things. Like Margaret had, I'm actually not really sure, I forgot to go through my Margarets. I have a bunch of them. But Lirika was like more artsy stuff, and it was really, really like psychedelic hippie artsy stuff. That's kind of cool, I thought it was neat. It was really like artsy, like woo! Or, you know, pushing the margins. But then if you look at like Ribbon magazine, it's much more traditional cute girly things, and they don't really have much plot. They're kind of horrible actually. But if you look at Ribbon then and Ribbon now, you can see how Ribbon has always had a certain kind of art style, that it uses that carries over. Like, I look at old ribbon comics, and I look at Hime-chan no ribbon, which, or Hime-chan's ribbon, and I'm like, whoa, that looks extremely similar. In fact, that's totally the face she was making on, you know, like page 48 or whatever, when she sees him run up the stairs. Man, that's a trip. Yeah. I don't know, I enjoy weird things. Yeah, but the full color manga, like,
wow.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, they all had like these different styles. And this one, I mean, it was just kind of like a smorgasbord of color. And they use all sorts of different, you know, media to make them. There are some that use marker, some people use watercolor, some people use colored pencil. And they did all sorts of crazy things with it. You know, there were some cutout things that I saw in one of them. And, you know, I kind of wish nowadays that people would, you know, instead of just coloring on the computer, you get, like, back to the roots, use real media and see what craziness you can do with it. And then see if you can imitate that in the computer and then do other things. I was going to talk about various different manga, and I was going to talk about Rose of Versailles. My internet died, so I was trying to fix it, and that was why I was late. So then I had to run over here, but I never got the picture. But I have something else to show you from Rose of Versailles. Rose of Versailles was really amazing manga that came out in this period, and it was historical, French Revolution, woman brought up as a boy, goes around righting wrongs and, you know, protecting the queen, and then fighting against the royal court, and storming the Bastille, and then, well, I'll spoil it, dying dramatically, going on today! And it's very sad. And there's so much melodrama. In this manga, and many of the manga of this period, you can really see the feminist, there was a feminist movement in Japan as well, and you can really see how it was influencing different women who, they were college age, like, when Ryoko Ikeda wrote Rose of Versailles, I think she was 21. And I mean, at first, it was like, not that popular. People weren't sure how it was gonna do. It was this epic story. No one had really done that before. And then it just took off and became this huge success. And throughout the 70s, people were like loving it, and it turned into an anime, and then they even turned it, this one girl, she loved the comics so much, and she really, really loved this all-female theater troupe called Takarazuka, where the women play the male and female roles. And Takarazuka, at this time period, people were saying, oh, Takarazuka is dying, it's going out. So she goes up to one of the big people who works there with the book, and she's like, I love this manga so much, could you make it into a play, into a Takarazuka performance? And the guy read it, and he was so impressed by it that he did. And that performance totally revived Takarazuka, completely, like, brought it back to life, and it still gets performed to this day. It's one of the big performances that Takarazuka does. I've actually seen it, and it's pretty interesting. I'm actually going to show you a clip from it, so you can get a little bit of an idea what it looks like. This is actually from one of the performances that I was at. The horse is a kind of a new addition. Oh, my name is Oscar. That's what she's singing. Oh, my name is Oscar. No, this is Oscar, who's a woman, but brought up as a man. So it's played by a person who normally plays male roles, but the character is actually a woman. So it's kind of confusing. She's saying, oh, I'm going to ride on the wings of you, Pegasus, and I will be able to fly as well. There will be no hesitancy in my heart, which has embraced love. Oh, my sword. Cut through all, you know, my indecision, blah, 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 blah. This is actually the scene is Andre, who is Oscar's servant and also love interest, is thinking about Oscar and how awesome Oscar is. So I don't know if when you think about the person you're in love with, you're like, yes, flying on a Pegasus. Yeah, there was a lot of adventure. Yeah, it's Candy Candy. A lot of adventure. Candy Candy, which was by Igarashi Yumiko and someone else. Does anyone know who? No? Whatever, it doesn't matter. They had a fight, actually. They had a huge battle. And like, there was a lawsuit because one of them was like, you're making money off of product, Candy Candy products, and I don't get any of it, so now I'm gonna sue you. And then no Candy Candy products could be made for a while, so it was kind of sad. I actually read in Frederick Schott's book that Candy Candy was one of these manga where, you know, she sits around dreaming and thinking about her feelings. And I think Frederick Schott, like, his book is awesome and everything, but I don't know, maybe he was thinking about another manga, because no. Really, really no. Candy Candy is awesome. Oh my god, okay. I went to Japan a couple years ago and I found the whole set of it. And I was like, oh, it's only $80, which is a ridiculous amount of money to pay on a manga. I think I'll buy it. So I bought it, and then I'm like sitting around reading it, and I was just taken to another world for a week. And in fact, dragged around the world, because Candy travels. She travels. She travels even if she doesn't have money. She just, like, hijacks a ship or something. Well, she sneaks aboard a ship anyway. She's always, basically the story is that there's this little orphan girl named Candy. She lives in the House of Pony, which is a little orphanage run by this little old woman. She lives there with all the other little orphan children, and she's pretty happy there. A little sad that she doesn't have any parents or anything. One day she's crying about it in the woods. This man in a kilt shows up, la da 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 da, and he's just playing his bagpipes. And she's like, "What are you doing? You're funny looking." And he's like, "Well, you shouldn't cry. You look silly when you cry. You should smile instead. You're cute when you smile." She was like, "I think I'll smile. Okay." And then she like laughs and she's happy. And he's like, "Oh, I have to disappear randomly." And she's like, "Hey, you dropped a brooch. I think I'll hold on to it." "Wow, he was so cool. He was just like a prince. He's my prince. I love him." So 6 years pass and she doesn't see him. And then she gets taken in by this family. And they're like, you know, like the evil stepmother kind of family with like the evil step-siblings. Except they're not really her siblings because they're like, "We're just going to hire you to play with our children." And the children are evil. And she's always beating up the boy, and like, I don't know if she beats up the girl. She should have. And anyway, so then they try to sell her off to Mexico.
As you do, as you do.
But before they do, I think, wait, did she run away before she gets sold off to Mexico or not? Well, anyway, she ends up meeting some guys who are from a neighboring house, who are really hot. And I actually see Candy Candy as one of like the first harem manga, except it's like a girl surrounded by a ton of hot guys. She falls in love with one of them, but the others, of course, are in love with her and are kind of attending to her. And they're rich and nice and wonderful to her, but their grandmother doesn't like her, and the people in the house she's living in don't like her. But they end up writing letters to their grandfather saying, "Oh, please take her in and adopt her into the family so she doesn't get sold off to Mexico." The grandfather is like, I guess he reads them and decides to adopt her right like around the time she's getting sold off. So she's being like, they portray the Mexicans in the most horrible, and this is like the stereotype of the dirty Mexican. I don't even know. He's wearing a sombrero even and a poncho, okay? Right?
How else do you know he's Mexican?
Yeah, right. I know. I don't know. Maybe because they say he's Mexican. But so he's taking her off to Mexico. She gets saved by this guy. Turns out that she's adopted into the family. And then she's really happy living with the family, even though some people don't like her. And things are hard for her sometimes. And then I think someone tricks her into believing that she's making life hard for everyone, so she runs away and finds some old bearded guy with a ton of little forest friends. And this is actually, if you don't mind me spoiling, because you'll probably never read this. It turns out that this guy is the guy she met when she was younger in the kilt. And you don't find this out until, like, the last 10 pages of, you know, the last volume. But she keeps meeting this guy over and over. But he just looks like this old, hairy barbarian man with, like, this on his shoulder. So, of course, she doesn't really recognize him. So she makes friends with him and then decides to go back. Everything seems to be going well, and she and Anthony are in love, and they decide, oh, it's like Scotland Day, and we're going to have a happy party or whatever. I don't remember what the occasion was. But they're all riding out on horses, and then trying to save her at one point or something, he falls off his horse and dies. Oh. And this is in, like, the first volume. So I'm like, eh. And, like, I cried for a day. And then I got over it. And then she has all these crazy adventures. I'm not gonna.
How many volumes are there?
There are like 8 or something. I mean, it was just really like, and so she ends up wanking about that for a while until she meets another guy. He hits on, I don't know, she fights with him a little bit, and then eventually they get together. But as soon as like they get together, suddenly he gets kicked out of the school they're going to and gets sent off to America. And she's in England in a boarding school at this point. She's originally from America. So she's in England in a boarding school, and she's like, oh no, he went off to America, this is so sad. And she's watching him from the church. She's like thinking in her mind about the crazy skunk guy and him. And she's like, oh, in America, people, those people that I love are doing things and following their dreams, and I should follow my dreams too. I think I'll hop on board a ship to America and become a nurse. So she runs off to America to become a nurse. I don't know. And then eventually, she meets up with that boy she likes again. Like, she's not even following him. She just kind of meets up with him randomly. But their romance ends up not working out because some chick in the theater troupe that he's in is like, oh, I love you so much. Oh no, a light's gonna fall on you. Push out of the way. Oh no, I can't use my legs. And then she's, you know, Candy's like, well, I don't want to give him up just because you sacrificed your legs for him. And she's like, I'm gonna throw myself off the top of a building. And Candy's like, okay now, don't do that. Don't do that. But I don't know, she kind of dragged herself.
Is there an English translation?
No.
No. You're getting the English translation.
So she drags herself. So Candy's like, oh man, okay, fine. You can go with him. So the other guy's like, what? I have to marry her? Oh. So Candy goes off and is like, I don't need love. And he's like, I'm depressed. And she's a nurse for a while, and like she goes and like, I don't know, serves in the war or something. I don't really remember. And then eventually she's off and she sees this guy, she likes Terry, acting in a theater troupe in some little frontier town. Yeah, so she sees him like in some frontier town, and she's like, he's like acting really badly. She's like, how far he's fallen, he's all drunk and stuff. And then she's like, oh, I could go to him, or, you know, not. And he sees her, and he's like, wait, I saw an apparition that looked like Candy. I think I'll reform myself and go back to Susanna, the stupid girl who tried to throw herself off the building. I'm like, no, I really wanted her to get with Terry. But then, like, in the end, she, like, meets Skunk Guy again, and he's like, oh, by the way, we should get married. She's like, yeah, sounds good. So then they get, I don't know, it kind of ends there. Or like, I don't even know if they decide they're going to get married. It just kind of ends with her realizing he's her prince and she being like, that's hot, I don't know.
I'm going to go to the house.